Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Sink or Swim podcast. This is your host, Katie. I'm a fourth year at NSUMD, and today I have a very special guest who will be joining me, my mom, if you want to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Katie's mom, Trina Kennan. Nice to meet everybody.
All right, so this episode is kind of special and unique, and I think would be very helpful to all of the parents of future doctors, because we're going to be talking about how my journey has been and the effects that it has had on my mom and how instrumental my mom has been for me throughout my journey through my medical career. So the first question that I have for you is, what was I like as a child?
Well, first of all, you've always wanted to be a doctor since you were a little girl. So our issues that we had with you was...
Wait. What are you going to say?
I'm not going to say. I'm just talking about you wanting to be a doctor. And remember, the issue we had was you doctoring on your dolls, and you painted chicken pox on your doll. Very interesting things happened as you were growing up. But you were always, growing up, you were a really sweet little girl. Not sure where that went awry, but okay. You were a very sweet little girl, always just, you know, wanting to have fun. Very close to your dad. I remember at one point you were fascinated with restaurants because your dad worked in a restaurant and you wanted to be a server. So you walked around. He gave you a little notepad like the servers had back then. And every night for dinner, you'd come around and take our orders on your notepad. Your dad loved it. Your brother and I thought it was annoying, but it was cute all the same. But, you know, growing up, you were just a very little sweet girl. Never got in trouble. Never really had to have much discipline. Mm-hmm. So until we hit middle school.
I was still fine, everyone, in middle and high school. I was a very smart girl who just went to school and did her work.
Very smart girl who did go to school and do her work. But, you know, when middle school and high school time, you got to be pretty mouthy.
I was
had
a typical...
the attitudes, you know, couldn't tell you anything. You were right. We were always wrong. Especially you and your dad.
I was a typical teenage girl.
Okay.
Who was slightly rebellious.
Yes.
With authority.
Only with us. Because you were fine with others. It's just that I think because we always allowed you to be able to express yourself, it kind of went overboard once you got a little bit older and you felt like you could express yourself all the time and however you want it. And so, yeah, that led to some issues that we had to correct.
Okay, but then those issues were corrected, and now what
those
would you
issues
say?
Were corrected, and now as the 31 year old that you are?
I'm not 31.
Almost.
I'm 30.
Okay, a couple of months.
Okay.
I think now you know you're my best friend, and we hang out, we have a good time, we have very good conversations. You've evolved from that spoiled, well, you're still pretty spoiled, but you have evolved.
I am the baby of the family, and so...
Yeah, and we're reminded of that at every chance that you
They're not reminded.
Get.
However, yes. I will say that my parents and my... older siblings, specifically my brother, have always wanted the best for me and have always supported me and everything that I wanted to do.
Sometimes it was that you wanted the best for you and we just had to pay for it.
It's the same thing.
Not so much.
Okay. Moving on. So you kind of already answered this question, but when did I decide I wanted to be a doctor, which you said I was... a little kid? Was there like a Like, did I just randomly come to y'all and say, oh, I want to be a doctor? Was there something that you feel like kind of led me to say that?
I'm not sure. I think you basically just started saying you wanted to be a doctor, and you just started trying to do doctor things. And I remember you would try and doctor on us, especially your dad, because your dad would let you do anything. And so from that, you just never changed from wanting to be a doctor. That was, you never thought about any other career or any other path to go down. And so from that point on, that's all you ever said. You know, most kids or you know, young adults will change their mind growing up. I mean, you might want to be something when you're little, and by the time you're in high school, you change that. But you just kept on that track, even with being in the medical magnet program at high school. So you just never left that thought. Mm-hmm. And you kept pursuing it. So yeah, apparently you were very serious.
I guess I was. Did you always believe that I would become a doctor?
Your dad always believed you would become a doctor. I think I always believed that you could become a doctor. But those times where it was really difficult and I saw the struggle before you got into medical school and the science classes, things like that, I did have times when I said, well, you know, when I thought maybe this might be a little bit too much for her. But you hung in there, and your dad has always, always said that you would get through it. He never deviated from that, no matter how hard it got. In your undergrad and even after you graduated from college and taking classes. And I just never want to see you upset or sad. So when you were having problems with a class and it was really difficult, so I did have times when I thought maybe this might be too much.
Mm-hmm. So we also kind of touched on this a little bit, but how was I academically in primary and secondary school? So like kindergarten through high school.
Oh, well, you always excelled in school. I mean, kindergarten, you were the valedictorian of your kindergarten class. Mm-hmm. And then you never really struggled much with school in general. I don't remember a time where I really had to get on to you about school and schoolwork and that sort of thing. Now, your brother was a different story.
Yes.
But you were always on top of things with school. And so you always did well. So it was really never an issue. When I would go into the planning center and look at your things with school, your assignments were always turned in, and you know, no, you never got in trouble at school. So you just kind of, you always did well in school.
I did struggle with pre-calc. You remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. And we had, I think one of my sorority sisters tutored you mm-hmm. for a while in that. But even in that, you just always seemed to pull it out. So.
Mm-hmm. What programs and activities did you have me involved in that you felt kind of helped me along this journey, especially during childhood?
Well, as you know, we were big involved in church. Mm-hmm. So you were always a part of the youth ministries at the churches that we attended. And then in various activities within the youth ministry, like you were in choir, you were in one of the younger dance groups, and then you moved up to the flag corps. So yeah, and you were a youth leader at one, at our former church. So I think all of that had a definite effect on you, because we kind of kept you involved in that. And then separate from that, you were also a Delta Gem, which is a part of my sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Incorporated.
Okay.
Shout out to all my sorors. You were involved in Delta Gems. And then with the medical magnet program that you were in, that also afforded you opportunities to actually go into the hospitals, and you did clinics. You were also involved in What was the thing?
Lanes.
Yes, Lanes, which was another girls group. So you were involved in things that were positive, that continue to help you to have a positive outlook about yourself and the world, really. But being in those things where with other girls, I think helped you a lot with your own self-esteem and just kind of developing.
So kind of moving past the childhood, like from baby to 18, what was the college admissions process like for you? I know you went through it with my brother first. Maybe you can kind of compare and contrast, like going with it with your first child versus me.
Okay. Well, at, definitely going through it with Daniel, of course, it was all exciting and everything with him because he's wanted to go to Florida State since he was about 2 years old. And he didn't even apply to any other college. So it was that. And
yeah,
so
he's crazy.
He's crazy that way. But it paid off because he was accepted. And it was just very exciting going through the whole orientation process with him. And then with you...
Well,
you,
pause. Why was it so exciting for you?
Because I went to FSU.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, I graduated from Florida State about 100 years ago.
Okay.
So, it was just real exciting to have him attending the same college that I attended. And then with you going through the process, you also wanted to go to Florida State. And I remember we were at church on a Tuesday night when the notices were coming out about acceptance. And you were accepted, and they played the Florida State song for you that Tuesday night. And it was really exciting because you were excited, you were crying, you were all excited about it. And then, but as the days went by, we were kind of looking at things and somehow ended up taking you to UCF to look at it and everything. You and your, at that time, best friend, James. And, you know, it was kind of, okay, we're just going to look and see because you had been accepted at UCF, I believe.
Yeah.
And we were just going and saying, and I was saying, well, you know, let's just keep our options open. We'll just go and, you know.
And I got a scholarship
and
there.
And you had a scholarship there. So that was another reason why I was trying to keep our options open. So we went to the orientation and everything for UCF. And I think it was, that was it the first day?
Yeah.
That you and James said you were going to UCF. Like, no questions asked, Liz. Like Florida State no longer existed or something. It was a pretty dramatic change, but for you, it was, you know, a good thing because it was what you wanted to do, and either way, you were going to get a good education, and it did not hurt that you had a scholarship. So.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, I don't remember a lot about the college admissions process, but I do remember that I applied to quite a few schools in Florida. And then I also remember getting it. You remember when I got the email from Harvard?
Oh, yeah. You got the email from Harvard that they wanted to interview you. So that was, like, incredible because, I mean...
We never thought about
never, that. Never, ever, ever thought about it.
And you were there for that interview.
Yeah, well, I couldn't go in, but I took you.
No, you were there. It was you and I.
Was I?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, well, I guess so.
We were at the Lost the...
The FAMU
law
school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was really exciting because even though, you know, you didn't get to go to school there, just being able to be interviewed by someone from Harvard was pretty incredible. So
Yeah, that was a cool thing. I did not get into Harvard, by the way, but it was a cool thing to do. So seems like everything was pretty easy going. Until I got to college.
Yep, we got to college. And as some freshmen do. You kind of lost your mind. We had you out there on campus, you and your best friend, and you apparently thought you had better things to do than to be productive in school. So while you were, hanging out with your best friend, going here and there, partying, staying up late, not getting up, all of that, of course, led to you losing your scholarship.
I did.
Yeah. So needless to say, we were pretty angry because, of course, we knew what you could do. And you just really just, there was really no reason for you to not have been doing well other than you just wanted to do whatever you wanted to do and hang out and just be, I guess, semi-adulting away from the home. So then as a result of that, of course, you know what happened with that. We brought you back home and you had to commute to school the rest of the time, which we live about an hour away from UCF. And you had to drive back and forth because, yeah, that was the consequences of losing your scholarship. So you no longer had the privilege of being on campus. But probably was the best thing that we did for you because then you had to kind of buckle down on your own, and driving back and forth, you didn't have time to be doing anything but going to class and doing what you needed to do. So it ended up being a good thing for you.
But even after first year, I still struggled.
Yeah, well, you struggle with science courses throughout, which they were difficult for you. And I know you've retaken classes to try to improve that. But, even in struggling with all of that, you still were determined and you didn't give up. So I think it was the good thing to see you have that kind of tenacity, even when you're, not doing as well as you'd like to do. And then having friends, I know you had some friends who were doing very well.
Yeah.
So which there was that.
Another struggle because at least after the first year it was just me and my best friend that you mentioned. And then that second year, I didn't really have any friends because he he stopped going to UCF altogether. So even though I was commuting like back and forth, I didn't have any friends at UCF anymore until third year when I did Delta Epsilon Mu. And that's when I really put myself out there because I mean, you could probably attest to it as well. Like my self-esteem was not very high.
No.
And I get very nervous, or back then I would get very nervous about like putting myself out there and like introducing myself to people and trying to make friends in like a new environment. And I feel like I was that way.
You were that way growing up.
Yeah.
You, in that sense, you're more like your dad because he's kind of like that in social settings and he's not going to just jump out there. I, on the other hand, am a social butterfly and I'll talk to anybody and meet anybody. But it was difficult for you to do that. So once you started getting involved with DEM, you did start to kind of branch out and you had new friends. And so that helped you a lot during that time, because you had, and not only were they new friends, but they were like-minded friends.
So this actually isn't a question that I have on here, but now I'm thinking about it. How did you feel about the fact that I did not apply to medical school right after graduation?
I wasn't upset about that because I figured you were going to do it when you were ready. And one of the things was you didn't think and interestingly enough, one of your professors had told you that maybe you should consider something else.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. It was either a professor, an advisor, one of them.
Advisor, yeah.
Had told you maybe you should consider a different career, which that made me upset because it's like, well, how dare you dash somebody's hopes? Whether you thought that or not, you shouldn't have said it. But when you didn't apply right after, and you told and you said the reason you didn't apply was because of your science GPA and that you wanted to work on trying to get that, bring that up some. So I wasn't upset by that, because right after you saying that, you actually went back to UCF non-degree seeking to just take science classes, which is pretty admirable, knowing that you're not getting anything in terms of a degree out of it, but just being that determined to go back to school and pay for classes
on my own,
on your own, on your own. It was pretty, that was pretty admirable to see. And, you know, you did that while teaching, because you did, after college, you, the first day you went to the open house or the job fair for, for Orange County Public Schools, the first people you interviewed with, which was Winter Park High School, they hired you on the spot. So now you had a job, and you went to school, you know, you were going back to UCF for the to work on your science GPA, but simultaneously you also had to study for the certification, the teaching certification. So you were taking classes, I think, with Valencia. So now you're taking classes with Valencia, classes at UCF, and teaching full time. So I don't know how you did it, but I think that was a crazy, that was crazy. But somehow you managed to pull through, and, you know, and you were a good teacher. You got your certification, and then you took those science classes and brought that science GPA up.
Yeah. That was definitely a wild time. I don't have a lot of memories because I think I blocked it out. But what was your, for you specifically, what was the biggest challenge during college and then after college, like before applying to medical school?
Probably just making sure you were okay with everything that you were doing. So I just was concerned about, you know, your mental health status, because that was a lot to be trying to juggle. But so that was my concern. I didn't say that to you, but I was concerned about, you know, how was that all affecting you, having that kind of load. And just, you know, wanting to I didn't want you to you know, because sometimes when people are trying to do all of that, it can lead to depression and things like that. So I didn't want that to happen for you. And I didn't say those things to you, but it was always in the back of my mind that, you know, because in doing all that you were doing, it didn't leave much time for social life. So I think that was the biggest thing for me. So.
Interesting. Okay. All right, so then, so we talked about college, talked about after college and getting my science GPA up and everything. And then I took the MCAT.
Oh, God.
What was that like for you?
Well, it was double whammy because it was also COVID time.
That was the second time I took the MCAT.
During COVID?
Yes.
So the first time you took it. Again, you were still, you were teaching and all of that and trying to study for MCAT. I didn't know a whole lot about anything because, of course, no one has on our side has gone to medical school. So I didn't, I wasn't familiar with the whole MCAT thing. I just remember you buying different programs to study and cutting, carving out all these different times that you needed to study. And yeah, it was kind of, and then me trying to make you stay on the schedule of studying and coming in your room saying, why are you sleeping? Are you supposed to be studying? And so that was pretty wild that first time. And then you took it and you didn't do as well as you wanted.
I got a 497.
Yep. So apparently that wasn't a good score.
No.
So you were disappointed, but even though you were disappointed, you bought yet another program to study from. Mm-hmm. And you started all over again. And then the next time you took it, it was even, you were working from home because it was during COVID time. So there was that period where you were teaching from home and still trying to study for MCAT. Mm-hmm. And you would take these practice tests and it would be one thing one time. Next time it's another score, and it was back and forth, and it was annoying. Well, not annoying. It was just a lot to watch. Because you'd get a good score, and then the next time the score wasn't as good as it was last time, and it was just, I know it was frustrating for you, but it was frustrating for me because it was like you was always on this roller coaster. Mm-hmm. You know, up, down, and I was just, got to the point where I just need this to be over. Just,
yeah.
So then the second time you took it, you got a good score, and then you started applying for schools.
Although, do you remember that I was not happy with the score I got?
No, you weren't happy. I remember that because Aaron was on the phone. Mm-hmm. And I was here when you looked at the score, and you weren't happy. But we were saying, but that's a good score. That's a good score. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And you were crying and you wasn't happy with it. But we tried to encourage you and tell you, no, you're going to get into school. You're going to get into school. And so, yeah, but then you kind of settled down after that. And then you started sending out your applications to the different schools.
Mm-hmm. And mind you, listeners, I looked at my score during a break in between teaching. So mm-hmm. then after crying hysterically, I had to teach a class immediately after.
Yeah.
So that's also real life for you. All right. So I started sending out applications. What was the application process like for you?
I remember you having to write these statements and all that kind of stuff. So it was me reading over them, your brother reading over them, and how you just stressed about that whole application. I mean, you must have rewritten stuff 50 million times, mm-hmm. trying to make sure it sounded right, trying to make sure your personal statement was right. It was a hard process because you were trying to be perfect.
Yeah.
And your goal, of course, is that you wanted to stand out so that, you know, of course, so that some school would accept you. But it was just a lot of back and forth with the writing and the rewriting, and mm-hmm. you would get upset with me because I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you, how to say it any differently, and then you would get annoyed with me, and your brother was helping you at the same time. You didn't get as annoyed with your brother
you always are like, I don't know what you want me to say. But him, even though I think that he didn't necessarily know everything to say, he knew that that probably wasn't the best thing to say. He never said, like, I don't know how to help you.
Well, I was just being honest because I didn't.
Yeah, I mean.
I did what I could. But, you know, for me, it was frustrating because it's like, I don't know what else to say. I don't know what else to do. Mm-hmm. I said this way. It sounded okay to me. You didn't, you know. Yeah, you would get pretty annoyed with me.
It was all out of love.
Yeah, but, so you say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that, you know, from this applicant side, we don't really think that much about how it affects other people around. So we're stressed mm-hmm. out and freaking out and wanting everything to be one way. And then you're stressed out because I'm stressed out. And then if I get frustrated with you, then now you're even more.
Yeah, because if you ask me to, and then I try to help you say or write it or say it differently, then you don't like the way that I said it, and then it's just was the constant back and forth. And, you know, there were times when I would just say to myself, you know what, whatever, just I'm pretty much over this, so whatever she does, then hey.
You've never told me that.
Well, because I would never tell you that while you were going through the process, but there were days when I was like, I am so over this. I don't even want to be bothered.
That is fair. That is fair. That is honest. But then I got offered an interview.
Yes, you got offered an interview. Which was the first one?
With Peacom.
And so you did the interview and everything. And so that went well. And at that time, so you had had the interview and everything, and that went well. And so had you had interviews with other?
Mm-mm. That was my first one.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the funny part was you had done the interview and everything, and we were kind of waiting around, and you were still waiting to see if you were going to get other interviews. And I don't remember what you went online with Peacom mm-hmm. for something. And it said something about your financial aid. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you were like, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So didn't really understand that because you hadn't gotten anything from them saying that you were accepted or anything yet.
Right.
And so we kind of just said, well, I don't know. We don't want to get our hopes up. We don't know what that means or whatever. And then the email came.
Yeah, the next day.
That said, and of course you didn't open the email until I was there and
Daniel was on the phone.
You had your brother on the phone. And you opened the email and it basically said congratulations and the whole nine, and you were crying and I was filming.
Yes.
And I was saying, you're going, you got in, and you said, I'm gonna be a doctor. So it was pretty, that was a pretty remarkable moment.
Yeah.
And of course I posted it all on Facebook and everything. So.
Well, we all did. Yeah, it was a big deal.
It was a really big deal. So then after that, we are settling in thinking you're going to Alabama.
Well, okay. After PCOM getting accepted, then I got offered an interview at Alabama,
mm-hmm.
which I really, really loved Alabama. And I got accepted.
Right.
Yes. I was happy with it. But remember, I got that interview at NSU in January.
Yes. But then did they put you on a wait list or something?
Yeah, they did. But this thing about NSU, right? Because I got rejected from NSU DO.
Right, yeah.
And NSU MD was the newer school that I didn't really know about until I applied.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, based off of just like my stats and stuff like that, and I hadn't heard back from any MD programs. We were kind of like...
Yeah, we were pretty much settled on DO. Mm-hmm. And you going to Alabama, we went up there for orientation, did all the things, and just knew that's where you were going to be. Your dad and I had gotten used or had settled on the fact that you were actually going to be that far away from home. We didn't like it because you were going to be, was it in...
Dothan.
And we went out there. There's not much around the campus. There wasn't much around the campus and everything. So we weren't really, the campus was nice. It just wasn't like being at a UCF or somewhere where there were a lot of things around and stuff. So, and we really struggled with you being that far away from home because you're a little different from your brother. You know, he can go away and be all right. But of course, you being the baby and being a girl, would worry 1,000 times more. So that time we were already settled. I had gotten in touch with sorority sisters there. We had gone out to dinner with one of them. So I was setting you up to be connected and have someone to help you out up there. And lo and behold, Nova came along.
Yeah, which it was kind of funny how that happened because after the interview with Nova, I was put on the wait list, which they told us that most of us that were interviewing or almost all of us would go on the wait list. And that's just kind of how they did their thing. But then right before we went to Alabama, I got an email from Nova asking if I wanted to stay on the wait list.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't tell anyone that until we were in Alabama. And I remember we were at Chick-fil-A eating. And I said, you know, Nova emailed me and asked if I wanted to stay on the wait list. You know, I haven't emailed back or responded. I don't know if I should because everything is set up here in Alabama. Like, we had the apartment. Like, everything was set up. And it was Daniel. It's always Daniel who was like, email them back and stay on the wait list. And I was like, yeah, but everything is all set up for Alabama. And he's like, just email them back and stay on the wait list. And so we came back from Alabama, and I want to say, like, a couple of days later, I got accepted into Nova.
Got into Nova. So then it was this whole thing of what should I do? Should I go to Alabama? Should I go to Nova? And we were kind of, you know, we would rather you stay closer to home. So it was kind of back and forth, not knowing what to do. And then Nova sends an email saying, oh, by the way, we're going to give you a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of sealed the deal for Nova. So it was the best of both worlds because you got to stay in Florida. You're only 3 hours away from home, which you could drive. And they also gave you money.
Yeah.
So, which helped. So it all worked out.
It did. And Daniel always says that when I told them about being on the wait list, he says that was the moment where he knew that I was not going to Alabama. And that I was going to go to Nova.
Oh, okay. See, didn't know that because you didn't. But, yeah, it was a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly took a load off of our mind. Now, it was a little, you know, disappointing that we had made all the arrangements and everything for Alabama. But, you know, you always end up where you're supposed to be.
Right.
So.
And then, so the next part of the journey after deciding on Nova was actually starting medical school. So what were your feelings like when I started medical school?
I mean, after I left you down there, after being there for 2 weeks and I cried like a baby, the whole ride home and all night and all that kind of stuff. It was okay because when you started, it was virtual. You were doing a whole lot of things virtual. So I remember saying, well, how long are they going to have y'all virtual? When are you going to go to the actual classes? Remember?
I went to class.
You did, but there was a lot of things that y'all were still doing.
I did. Yeah, we did PBL virtual. But everything else was in person.
No, because I remember you at me asking how long it was going to be before you had like all your classes there on campus and stuff.
Okay, well, the only thing that we didn't have on campus was PBL and TBL. All
right.
Because the 2 weeks of orientation, everything was on campus.
Yeah, I know that. But it seems like there was more virtual stuff when you...
Probably because 4 days out of the week, that's all we had was PBL and TBL. Because lectures...
Then maybe that's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. But sorry, go ahead.
So yeah, so then, you know, starting out and everything, and it was okay. And of course, your class, you met your classmates and things like that. So that was good. But then school started really kicking in and, you know, really becoming real that you were in medical school and that it wasn't an easy journey. And so... Yeah, the whole time you've been in medical school, I feel like I've been in medical school.
Mm.
Because every step, every test, every whatever, it seems like I was taking the test and doing whatever as well. Because, of course, you call me every day, which is what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And just letting me know, you know, when you were really stressed about the test coming up, and it was just a lot of trying to keep you encouraged, but in the me also being very stressed because I don't know, because what how is she gonna, you know, is she gonna do well or not? I don't know. And you know, you were never every test, most of the tests you take, you would never come back saying, yeah, I did good. It was always, I don't know. You know, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I think I said to you one time, you never say that you did well.
Those tests were hard.
They were hard, but you know, you a lot of times you would come back from it and you've done very well.
Yeah.
But the getting to them was just stressful for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was nothing that I could do other than try and encourage you and tell you, you know, just keep studying and praying, lots and lots and lots of praying, and having all of my friends and colleagues praying. So yeah, there was a lot of that. Lots of phone calls to one particular prayer partner.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the whole time was just really, it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it helped out that you did make friends and you had friends there, that you could talk to and do things with, but really it was all about school. And it was hard.
It was. And out of all of those difficult moments, what was the hardest?
Probably when you didn't do well on a test. You didn't fail them.
Mm-hmm.
But not getting a grade from what you were telling me that you wanted to get or whatever. And then you would be down about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, then I got to go back into the encouraging mode and try to tell you, you know, hey, next time you'll do better and this, you know, and those kinds of things. But you would just pick everything apart. Even with those, when you used to do those where you had to actually work on a patient.
Oh, yeah, the OSCEs.
Yeah, you would come back and...
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I forgot to do this. I didn't do this. And, oh, you know, and that, and you didn't know what grade you were going to get from that because you didn't know how much it was going to cost when you missed something.
But remember, I did fail an OSCE one time, I had to repeat it.
You did. Yeah, and that wasn't fun.
Devastated.
You were. You were very devastated. But you repeated it and you did it. But yeah, so even with those, it was like, good grief. So, you know, and I would say, well, you know, but the bulk of the things you did, right? Well, yeah, but I forgot this one. Oh, that's major. And it was just a lot trying to, because at the same time, I don't really know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I can only explain it so much.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to just move from what you're saying, and I'm thinking that sometimes, you know, I doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but you felt differently. But most of the time you came out doing well on them. So
yeah, except for that one, I forgot about that. I did fail that OSCE, and I was literally devastated. And I remember when I did the repeat, I walked out because I ran out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the facilitator that was grading me had said some comments that were kind of like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I even passed this remediation. And I walked out and I just started crying. And all of my facilitators, Dr. Fine, Dr. Al-Kayat, they were all there and they're like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And I'm like, I don't think so.
Yep, but it was.
But it was.
And that was another thing about you being down there. Your professors and advisors and stuff, they just really helped you a lot. And they just fell in love with you down there. So that made me feel good that it seemed like you had people that really cared about you.
Mm-hmm.
And you were able to go talk to them when you were having struggles, your dean and all of that. And then I got to talk to your dean over the phone.
Yep. Shout out to Dean Pritchett.
Yes, and finally got to meet him in person. But he understood me as a mom,
mm-hmm,
while you were, you know, with everything you were going through as well. So it made me feel good that you were in good hands down there. So I think that they really did good by you, as far as they encouraged you a lot too.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And helped you. They would make phone calls. It was just kind of crazy because I'm like, why are these people this way?
I know. Why are they doing all this for my child?
Yeah. And so it was pretty awesome. But the one thing, though, during all of the going through school is that you just blossomed and just came into your own. You got out of that being quiet and kind of to yourself, and all of a sudden you were being asked to go to this conference and that conference and present here and present there, and you were writing articles, and it's just like you were just a whole different person. Like, and I told people several times, like, you just really found your niche and you were just in your element, because it seemed like every time there was something to do or that they needed someone to go here or there, you were on the list and you were going and presenting at all these conferences and stuff like that. And so it was kind of, that was really amazing to see, because I can remember when you were just not that way, and to have you getting up in front of people and presenting. I remember at the one conference you went and you told the story of one of your experiences, and the audience was crying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm like, this is the same Katie that, you know, but yeah, you just really came into your own and into who you really are. And you just kind of left that shy person behind and just kind of stepped out there. And then you were, you know, getting involved in things. You were president of the pediatric.
Mm-hmm. And SNMA.
And SNMA. Yeah, those letters.
Uh-huh. A lot of letters in medicine.
Yeah. So you were getting all involved in that, and it was just so interesting to see how you just really came out of your shell in medical school. So, and kind of started the end of your time at UCF, because you did the Midnight Mentors organization that you founded, which was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
But then once you hit medical school, you just kind of didn't look back. And was just doing your thing.
Which leads me to my next question. What was the proudest moment for you throughout medical school?
Oh, the white coat.
Okay.
The white coat ceremony. Because seeing you get the coat and everything just really made me think, you know, she's really going to do it. She's really going to do it. So I think that was probably the proudest moment that I experienced there, was watching you walk up there and get that coat.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I just said, well, she's actually going to do this. So I was very proud.
We'll see if that remains your proudest moment since graduation is in 2 months. But
No, well, we'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. So now that we're at the end of the medical school journey, and
thank God.
Okay. Yeah. But now we're starting the residency journey in a few months. What are some things that you are looking forward to as a mother?
You having a job and having money.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be. Yeah.
Great. Awesome. That's all you're looking forward to is me having a job and money.
You're getting out of my purse.
There you go. I will still be in your purse.
No, I'm going to be in your purse.
Not during residency.
No, I think I'm looking forward to, because we call, you know, your dad calls you Doc and people at church call you Doc. But I'm looking forward to that really being somewhere on some paper that says Dr. Caitlin Kennan. MD, OBGYN.
Mm-hmm.
And looking forward to that moment where I'm saying, my daughter is a doctor. She's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
She's not, you know, and not, no shade to any of that, but she's not a chiropractor or or something like that. She's an actual doctor that delivers babies, that takes care of women and can do surgeries and all of that. So it's just, I don't know. That's, I anticipate that being just a really unique feeling, because I mean, we treat you like a doctor around here, because anything that happens to any of us, anybody in our immediate family, you're the doctor. And we're always asking you, and I have to say, I am appreciative, and I tell people all the time that, especially with your grandparents, when they've been in the hospital or when they've had things go on with them, that you're the one that can actually go and talk to the doctors and the nurses, and they're always amazed that you actually know what you're talking about and speaking their language. And I think it helps to get better care for them, because they know there's somebody who actually knows what's going on. And so, yeah, you've been doctor for us for a minute. So, and you know, your dad's always asking you about something.
Yeah, it's been a very long couple of months with flu season. But yeah, I think it's been pretty cool to see, and just to be able to advocate more for, especially like you said, like my grandparents and things like that, because, you know, I am the only one in the family who, like, we don't have nurses and things like that. So it's a whole nother world. And like, for me, I'm used to it, but kind of looking at it through y'all's lens, it's like, it's a whole nother language that you're talking.
Yeah. And we have no idea, and we don't know what questions to ask. So it's just been a blessing to have you there to be able to ask the right questions and then explain the answers to us.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. What are your fears about me starting residency? Or do you have any fears?
I don't.
Really?
I don't, because I think your journey in itself was such a hard journey to get to medical school and to get to this point. And I don't have any fears. I think you're ready. I think you're ready to go out there and do what you've been trained and taught to do. And so I don't really have any worries. It hasn't even crossed my mind as anything I should be concerned about. I think you've run into situations where during rotations where you were not liked by some of the people you had to work with. I think you dealt with situations where you thought things weren't fair. And I've told you, you know, anytime those situations have come up, I said, you're just being prepared, because even as a doctor, everybody's not going to like you. Everybody's not going to agree with you. So this was all getting you ready. And so I don't have any worries. I don't have any fears. I know, and I feel in my heart, I know in my heart that you're ready. That you're ready to get out there, and I think you're going to make a difference. And I think you're going to be one of the best ones out there, because you have a caring heart anyways. And you're going to be that way with patients. And, you know, us having an awesome OBGYN, I think you'll be just like, if not better than him.
Wow. Okay. Big words. So we're kind of winding down. I have my final question for you, which is, what advice would you give other parents of pre-med or medical students?
No matter what it looks like, don't give up. No matter what it looks like, always be on the side of your child. And always, even when you don't feel it, always be their biggest and number one cheerleader. So even when you don't think it's going to happen, when you're talking to them, always make them feel like they're the best thing since sliced bread, and cheer them on and be connected to them. Don't just let them go off to medical school and you kind of are not connected and you don't know what's going on. Like I said, Katie, you call me every day. Mm-hmm. And if we don't talk, I'm calling saying, hey, what's going on? You didn't call me and you did the same thing. And it just, I think it helped you to mm-hmm. have a parent that was connected and stayed connected and didn't just kind of let you go and just, oh, well, you know, you're out there. You go ahead and do what you need to do. But it's important that you stay connected. It's important that you know what's going on. It's important that you have names of those that they're dealing with. And I can't say enough that you got to be the number one cheerleader, because everybody doesn't cheer them on and everybody doesn't think they're as great as we think they are. Mm-hmm. But you just got to stay in there, hang in there. The times when they call you crying, times when it's late and you don't feel like talking, or times when it's not late and you just got home from work, or you just did this or that and you just want to relax, but then they call and you got to listen to whatever is going on in that day. Those are just things you have to do, because I think in the end, when you see the reward for all that they've been through, you'll be as appreciative, if not more, than they are.
Well, good advice. Yeah, great advice. All right, y'all. Well, this is going to be the end of this episode. So thank you, Mommy, for joining me. And I think this episode is definitely needed, and I think it's going to help a lot of people, or I hope it helps a lot of people.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, y'all. This will be my last episode of Sink or Swim. It's been a pleasure recording these episodes, and hopefully I'll see some of you in medical school and on the medical journey.